Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From KQED.
Well, we made it.
We made it. We're here. It's Friday.
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. The name Willie Brown is synonymous with power politics in California. For decades, starting in the 1960s, he was a fixture in Sacramento and San Francisco, and not without his share of controversy. He became the first black speaker of the state assembly in 1980 and held the job for a record 14 years, often with help from Republicans. After term limits forced him to leave the legislature, he ran for mayor of San Francisco, knocking off an incumbent and serving 8 years in that job. Last month, Brown turned 90. Marisa Lagos and I sat down with him in his San Francisco office to discuss his path from segregated Mineola, Texas, to the height of power in California. Well, Willie Brown, thank you for spending time with us. You just turned 90. And when some people have big birthdays like that, 70, 80, 90, they get reflective and they look back on their life. What about you?
Not me. I'm moving ahead.
Why? You don't like looking back?
There's no reason to look back. Something might catch me.
You came to San Francisco in 1951 from Mineola, Texas. You were 17. When you stepped off the bus, I assume it was a bus, you came on. Did you ever imagine all these years later you would have had the life you've had here?
No, in reality, I landed in Oakland. The train stopped in Oakland where I was offloaded in my uncle, whom I came to live with, drove me across the bay. And it was fascinating with all the lights.
Uncle Itzy.
Yes.
And what did he tell you about San Francisco? Like, what did you expect when you got here?
I really didn't expect anything except his sister, my mother, had mandated two things. Enroll in college and join church. Other than that, you're on your own. And he wanted to emphasize that admonition in those directions. But he added one more. I am not available to offer you any assistance. You really are on your own.
Financial assistance.
Well, it wasn't financial assistance that he was talking about. He was talking about, I think, raising children. He was not into child raising.
You've told us before that, yeah, he told you walk around the city, figure it out. You did go to college, and you also joined, I think, Jones United Methodist Church. What impact did that have in, you know, getting your feet under you here in San Francisco, helping you start what would later become a very successful political career?
Well, it gave me great directions, because when he said, go out that back door, and the bar that he took me to the first day I'm here, right out behind the bar across the alleyway was Jones Memorial Methodist Church. And it was a guy named Hamilton Boswell who was the pastor. Hamilton Boswell participated in my life of adjusting to San Francisco from that moment on.
And so what did you get from the church? Because it was very politically active, right?
It was the best political church in the city. I didn't know it as a political church at that time. But on reflection, Ham Boswell ended up on the public housing authority, appointed by Moscone. Several of his members had civil service positions, both federal and local. Several of his persons had membership in various organizations, the NAACP, the fraternal organizations, etc., and they were extremely competitive. And one of his members was a public defender, a member of a public defender group. It was just fabulous to have so many of those people giving me directions on the first day.
In the past, obviously, being a young Black man in that era posed a lot of challenges. But I wonder if it also gave you opportunity, because you could go to a place like that church and meet all those people. And I don't know, you know, you made a name for yourself pretty quickly with the way that you came at everything. But I'm just curious if, like, there was a double-edged sword to being part of the Black community in that time.
Well, in reality, the Black community was very large and very, very much involved in trying to move San Francisco along. There were three distinct Black communities. There was the Fillmore, where Jones Methodist was located. There was Hunters Point, or Baby Hunters Point, where many of the Blacks lived who worked for the federal government at that facility out there. And then there was Ocean View, or Ingleside, as they called it, where the Black teachers and preachers and doctors and others lived.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about the state of San Francisco right now. It's been a long time since you first got here. You walk around the city a lot. I think you walk to work. You live downtown. What's your take on how the city's doing right now?
I think the city is doing what San Francisco always does. San Francisco presents a challenge on a daily basis from the first day I got here, and it still does. And it makes it, therefore, the most interesting big little city, a little big city, I guess I should call it, and what you could ever want to be a resident of.
Are the challenges now unique?
They're unique because there have been so many constant, ongoing changes in the rules of how the city is supposed to be run, period. I guess maybe that's part of what life was like before I got here.
What do you see as sort of the biggest opportunities right now for San Francisco? We're seeing, I think, an effort, you know, to revitalize downtown. We're seeing a lot of AI companies come in. Like, do you think that's the next chapter here?
Well, let me tell you, I think that the city decided some time ago, and with people who preceded me in the world of running San Francisco, or trying to run San Francisco, they wanted to kind of close the door and keep other people out. There was not a welcome mat extended, frankly, in the way in which welcome mats are extended, where there's room to grow. San Francisco does not have any room to grow. Never has. We've always had to adjust and make to do with what space we have. And we're still doing that, except that there are more people participating and trying to do it.
We have a mayor's race this year. And London Breed, of course, is running for re-election. Her approval rating, not so great. You've said she's hard to beat. What are her chances?
She wins.
Why should she be re-elected?
She will be re-elected because she has earned the right to be re-elected. We've only had, I think, in my history, two people who only served one term. Frank Jordan, whom I defeated, and Art Agnos, whom Frank Jordan defeated. Other than that, the person who gets elected to mayor of San Francisco, for my history, keeps the job. By the second time, though, that they're running, that is always a challenge, because San Francisco is made up of people who, by birth, think they have the right to vote on the first year of their life. And that's the way this city operates.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with former Mayor Willie Brown. You're listening to Political Breakdown.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with Marisa Lagos. We're talking with former mayor and former assembly speaker Willie Brown. We're talking with him at his law offices in San Francisco.
So you were just saying that London Breed deserves another term, and I'm curious, what would you point to as her biggest strengths?
She started with me. She was an intern in 1996 in my office. She had just graduated, I think, from Davis, University of California, Davis, and I met London, saw her someplace, and urged her to work with the mayor's office of neighborhood services, and she did, and that's how I met her, and I instantly recognized this woman had unique talent.
Back to Maurice's question, like, why does she deserve to be reelected? I mean, if you look at some of the data, the vacancy rate downtown is 9 times what it was before the pandemic.
But keep in mind, she had nothing to do with that vacancy rate other than follow the recommendation nationally of the U.S. government. And that is, you've got to shut everything down, keep people away from each other. I disagreed with that, by the way. I think that you literally should have had some conversation about what should be done. That's a recommendation. She literally followed instantly and became, frankly, canonized almost for having run the best operation for the pandemic. Well, I don't understand how you don't at least ask me if I own a hotel, can you somehow comply with the rules and the regulations that need to be done for health purposes? And if you can, you can manage your hotel. Same with your restaurant. Same with your theater. The same with your church. The same with everything. America went crazy, literally crazy. And many people followed it. And London was one of them that followed it, as were most of the mayors throughout the country.
But isn't that then a mark against her?
No, not necessarily. You really, it may not be a good idea to do what Willie Brown does.
Especially when it comes to public health. Let me ask you about the mayor's race this year, because it's going to be a very, I think, animated, lively campaign. Mayor Breed is facing several challengers, and one of them, Aaron Peskin, you have said would be perhaps the most formidable. He's somebody that's not afraid to make people angry. He knows how the city works. He knows how to get things done, one could argue. Why do you think he's such a formidable opponent for her?
He was a pain the whole time I served as mayor of San Francisco. For the limited period of time, I had to put up with him, electorally speaking. But I found him talented. I found him focused. I did not find him as loving of all the people in the city of San Francisco, which I think you really have to be. I think he has grown by virtue of the 15 years that he has been an elected official. But London Breed is one, a woman, two, she's black. And the interesting thing about that, if you spoke to him, he would say, Willie Brown can't support me and won't support me because she represents part of the symbol of what he has always been about.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
Do you see any of yourself in him? He's a pretty good operator. He knows how to cut a deal. Do you see anything there?
Yeah, he's similar. He is similar.
Like, I've always thought he could have gone to Sacramento,
except
too.
Except that he was not, he was not as charitable as I have been. The reputation that he has sometimes causes people not to want to even be near him. He is so quick and so much smarter than most and so better informed. People really have trouble adjusting to his existence politically.
Yeah. Mark Farrell, Daniel Lurie, also running.
Asha Safai.
Do you see them? Like, where do you see them?
Worked for me.
Yeah.
Asha worked, was on my payroll. Asha helped run the housing authority when I served as mayor. Asha is a good man, really a good man. And I don't think his running against London makes a whole lot of sense. I think he does, because I think he wanted to be a supporter of London, and that for whatever reason, he didn't think she would ever support him. And I think he tells the story that he's running because she wouldn't say, you have an equal shot at my support when you run in the future as any of the other people.
What about Farrell and Lurie?
Neither of them, in my opinion, are at this moment ready for leadership at the city level. I think that Lurie probably would get along better with the nonprofits than almost anybody else. And I think that Farrell he's had a chance to demonstrate his skills and his ability. He didn't get elected mayor, though. He got sanctioned to fill a vacancy for a short period of time. He had almost nothing to do with that. That was
Aaron Peskin.
Yep. Back to that kingmaker. Before we move on, I just want to ask, you have always been very pro-business, but you also were a civil rights leader in your time, not only on issues of racism, but also LGBTQ issues, things like that. And you said earlier that, we have a limited amount of space here in San Francisco, and there's always been an effort to keep some people out. I guess I wonder if you feel any sort of common cause with progressives who see a lot of their policies as an attempt to keep, especially brown and black families, in the city.
Progressives cannot win citywide. That's why they never submit themselves for citywide purposes. Pure progressives. They are aware that the rules have to be changed to be helpful to their efforts to become the theoretical leaders of a city, period. An example, I think that if you would note that they changed the rules, pushed to get districts because they could win citywide as supervisors. They could not win citywide because they don't appeal to everybody.
But isn't there an argument that that's a good thing? Do the people of Seacliff have the same interest in a supervisor as the people of Bayview Hunters Point?
We live in a city where there's some of everybody. That's the diversity of the city. And you don't have to agree, period. But you ought to have to make the case to everybody, period. You should not be able to make the case to just one entity. The progressives tend to want to do it their way. And believe me, they believe that we all, in many cases, ought to follow their way. That's not how a democracy works.
What do you make of this trend in the city? We've seen the former district attorney, Chesa Boudin, recalled, some school board members recalled. We've seen challenges to some of the more progressive supervisors. Some one at least has lost. And it's funded in large measure by tech people. They say the city's gone too far to the left. Do you think it's a good thing for the city to have so-called moderates, only by San Francisco standards, taking over?
I don't believe in recalls at all. I don't think once you're elected, you have to serve their term, unless you get indicted or unless you do something really egregious. And then you ought to be impeached, not recalled. And that impeachment process ought to be so established.
But in terms of this general direction that they're trying to take the city, what do you think?
Well, I don't think they're trying to take the city. I think that not just as tech people, they have accumulated whatever resources they have accumulated, and they think their ideas are better, and they are entitled in this democracy to shop those ideas. I don't happen to think that their ideas are any better than yours or mine, period, on many issues.
The Biden-Harris ticket is struggling to some extent with voters of color, particularly men, black and Latinos, who we've seen drift toward Trump and the GOP, not in large numbers, but big enough to potentially impact this race. What do you think Biden-Harris needs to be doing?
Well, I think that I'm more concerned about that Kennedy kid than I am about...
Kid, he's 70, but yeah.
I know.
It's all relative.
I'm 90, so the Kennedy kid, because he's pushing himself off as being a Kennedy kid. He has not positioned himself as being a long, true blue Democratic politician, because he really isn't. He has never been. He's an oddity. And believe me, he troubles me more than anybody else, period. If he gets out of the way, in no question in my mind, that Trump will be beaten a second time, and he will be beaten by the natural ticket of Joe the guy, Joe the common person, Joe the not so glamorous, not so handsome, not so clever, not so, capable of giving a speech, but he is a natural for people. And if he is left to that device, he'll win again. In the meantime, if he gives Kamala Harris the right to drop all those bad advisors he saddled her with, she'll do the job that she needs to do to help carry the ticket like she did when he first tapped her.
I want to go back a little bit in your history. You haven't lost a lot of elections, but you've lost a couple.
Your first, one.
No, well, wait. 62, you lost your first assembly race.
Yeah, and then in 70, that's the only one.
Well, in 74, you tried to be speaker and you lost that. It was a different kind of election.
Well, but that wasn't much of a race at all. That was a situation in which a black man who couldn't get appointed to something from me accepted the opportunity to get that appointment from somebody else. And that's what he did, and that's what you do in politics.
Well,
but
that's
all internal.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the public.
Sure, but you as speaker, it was all internal, right? It was about running that operation, which you did well. And I'm wondering, what did you learn from that? Because you lost to Leo McCarthy, who was another San Francisco Democrat, and you lost four of the six black assembly members who voted for him.
And they're all dead.
Hopefully you didn't have anything to do with that.
No proof.
But what did you learn from that?
Well, I didn't really have to learn anything from that. I have never been for caucus electing a leader. I've been for the memberships evaluating who ought to be the best leader of the House. And therefore, that's what I did.
With a lot of Republican help.
More Republicans than Democrats. I had 28 Republicans out of 32. I had 23 Democrats out of 48. And it lasted twice as long as any other person ever to hold the speakership. I held the speakership for 14 and a half years. 7+ years is the history of speakers in the state of California, including Leo McCarthy and Jess Unruh, both of whom were fabulous speakers. No other speaker has even come close. No one could vote me out because the membership on both sides of the aisle understood that Willie Brown ran the House. Operation of the House is what my goal was. And I did that. And believe me, it was so well handled that the only way they could get rid of me was to go term limits.
So you could teach maybe a few people in D.C. a thing or two about keeping a caucus together. What do you see as your legacy? How do you want to be remembered?
I loved nothing better than helping people who believe in the democracy as I do and would like to continue in one fashion or another participating. And if they have trouble, they can talk to me and I'll do my best to help them.
Well, Willie Brown, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us about your life and your career.
Thanks, Mayor Brown.
And that's a wrap for Friday, April 12th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineers are Seal Muller and Catherine Monahan. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. Our team includes Guy Marzorati, Molly Solomon, Otis R. Taylor Jr., and Ethan Tobin Lindsay. For Marisa Lagos, I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.